injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
And welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and other great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works and S&I Remodeling. Joining us now, State Representative Lisa Subek. She represents the 78th Assembly District, which is Madison's far west side. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sly.
I figure I've known you before you were a representative, so I can say Lisa.
Yes, it's okay. Fine to call
okay.
me Lisa.
Okay. So, you know, the economy has been okay. We've got a relatively low unemployment rate in Wisconsin that the governor likes to take credit for. But wages are still a big problem. And it seems like that just isn't being addressed. As a matter of fact, it almost seems like they're going out of their way to suppress wages in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, Republicans have spent really the last 10 years, or close to 10 years now, I guess 8 years. 8 years that they've been in office, it feels like a decade. They've spent that entire time suppressing wages. I mean, it has been action after action to drive down wages, sometimes just for one sector, sometimes for all Wisconsinites. You know, they eliminated the minimum wage council. They have, you know, messed around with anybody with any sort of collective bargaining rights, everything from prevailing wage to, you know, right to work for less to, you know, even Act 10, taking away public union bargaining rights. I mean, all of these actions drive down wages, and there's so much more that they've done. I mean, they've continued to subsidize businesses, yet not look at the needs of their employees and the people of the state, the hardworking families. And, you know, what we're seeing now is more families are living paycheck to paycheck, really struggling just to get by, really living on the edge. And, you know, Wisconsin's economy is not doing as well as Scott Walker might have you think, particularly when you compare it to economies of other states. You know, there's been certainly, you know, when he came in, we were, you know, at a recession level. The entire country has come out of the recession. There's a reality he can't really run around and take credit for that.
Oh, well, he somehow found a way to blame the recession that did happen on Jim Doyle.
Right, which is, I mean, you know, it's absurd. It's absurd. We had a national recession. We came out of a national recession. And, you know, Governor Doyle was governor 8 years ago, and Scott Walker's still trying to, you know, blame him for today's problems. And, you know, I think it's time Scott Walker step up and take some of that blame. You know, he's created these problems, and, you know, and we have to get out of this mess, and we need to do that by getting a governor who is willing to see things for what they are and help us move forward.
So tell us about AB 748.
AB 748 is a bill that Republicans have introduced that would take away the ability of our local elected officials to do things like set city or county-level protections for people. You know, in the city of Madison, we have some protections, and as do many other cities. This isn't a Madison-only kind of a thing, but the city of Madison, we have a number of protections to ensure people aren't discriminated against in the workplace that they don't have everywhere. AB 748 would also take away the ability of local government to set policies, on a whole wealth of things, and I'm, you know, sitting here trying to go through the list really quickly, but things like hours of work, wages. State government already says the local government can't do, and that's something actually this week Senators Hansen and Senator Johnson and I announced our local wage act to restore the power to local government to set a local minimum wage that's responsive to the values and the cost of living and the economy of the community.
And to be fair, that they were going after that before Scott Walker was even governor. In order to get the last minimum wage increase that we got, which was over 10, almost 11 years ago, because the Republicans had one house in the assembly, even to get that increase, that local control was lost.
Right, right. So that was done even before Republicans had, you know, the governor and the majorities in the legislature. They did that through, you know, sort of a forced compromise in order to get minimum wage increased at all. And, I mean, our minimum wage is sitting at $7.25 an hour. And yesterday we had this hearing on this AB 748, which, you know, like I said, it's sort of a wealth of areas that takes away basically local government's ability to regulate anything within the employment sector. And it's ridiculous because these are things that protect our local citizens. You know, our local elected officials know their communities better than anyone else. And they are in the best position to make decisions that are responsive to the values of their community and to the needs of their community. You know, the cost of living is not the same as in Madison as it is in Superior, as it is in Marshfield. You know, pick any three cities and you're going to find cost of living is different. There's other pieces that are different. You know, in the Madison Equal Opportunities Ordinance, we have a law that you can't discriminate and deny somebody a job just because they're a student. Nor can you say, I will only employ students and deny somebody a job because they're not a student. That protection is really relevant here in Madison, where we have a university and we have a lot of students, and that's actually been an issue in the past in either housing or employment. And, you know, in another city where you don't have a campus, that might not be a concern at all. And, you know, it's my belief that the state should really set the floor. We should set the minimum standard of protection. We should say, look, you know, we have an equal opportunities ordinance. It protects these groups of people. It protects you based on your age, based on your gender, based on your race. But there is no reason that we have to set that as the ceiling. That should be the floor. And if local communities believe it is good for their community to go further, they should absolutely be able to do that and provide those additional protections.
Well, case in point, the voters of Milwaukee voted for an ordinance that employers would have to pay sick days, a certain amount of sick days. So what did the Republicans do? They came in. First of all, they fought it. They took it to court. They lost in court. And then they passed a preemption law that took it away. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, don't these Republicans go out to dinner? Do they really want a waitress or somebody serving their food that's sick, preparing their food? Honestly, what's wrong with them?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's unbelievable to me. And, I mean, in that case, it was particularly appalling because the voters actually passed it.
Right.
And, they, you know, I mean, talk about people who know their local community. It's the people who live there. And, you know, that is actually why the second half of the Local Wage Act, which, as I said, we introduced earlier this week, the second half of that restores the ability of local communities to set sick leave or family and medical leave policies. You know, we had a woman come and speak at our press conference. Her name was Sierra, and she's a certified nursing assistant. And she talked about what it's like to try to make ends meet on
low wages. Let me play a little bit of that coverage from Channel 27.
Nearly a decade since the minimum wage was raised here in Wisconsin, and Democrats say if Republicans want to start changing things like reforming the welfare system, they should start adding increasing wages on the list. Also, with the possible repeal of the Family and Medical Leave Act, Democrats say they just want to have a backup plan.
I'm here in a state by myself, and I'm a single parent, so I have to be there for her.
Like many parents trying to find a babysitter or even the option to afford to take the day off to care for their child is not easy. For Sierra Fox, raising the minimum wage could be the start for her to finally make ends meet.
I picked up a job and I would never work for that amount. But I have four kids to feed. I have bills. I don't get any, a housing voucher? I don't have that.
Democratic lawmakers are proposing the Local Wage Act. It would allow local governments to establish their own minimum wage.
The Wisconsinites are struggling. They don't have what they need.
All right, we're already talking to you, but there's a clip of the woman you were talking about. You know, I imagine as Republicans watch that, they were passing judgment on her. Why do you have four kids? Why are you single? Why are you... You know that's what they do, Lisa.
Well, yeah, I mean, I sat in a hearing on, you know, Governor Walker's package of changes to, you know, some of our basic safety net programs, things like our food share program and housing programs for low-income folks. And, you know, those were exactly the kind of judgments that we heard made sitting in that hearing. And, I mean, that's, you know, the other thing going on right now, you know, Governor's $90 million a year package.
And we'll get into that.
To screw poor people.
We'll get into that.
I mean, exactly. I mean, it's all related because you hear what's going on here, and all of this is election year campaign gimmicks, wanting to, you know, play to their far right wing base. And, you know, I think they have a really extreme base that, you know, likes to, you know, they think they can gin people up by demonizing poor people. And, you know, it's a little bit of what Donald Trump did. And I think that, you know, after Donald Trump experience, people are ready not to be fooled again.
This goes back to Tommy Thompson, who used welfare reform. And we know why he was using welfare reform. Not that some changes didn't need to be made, but at least at that time, there was a Democratic legislature. So representatives like mine, Becky Young, I don't know if you ever got a chance to meet Rebecca Young, but she was a marvelous state representative who used to be on the school board. She forced Tommy Thompson to make some changes on that welfare reform bill that provided a certain amount of daycare and help for people in tough situations. We don't have that right now. There is no ability for you to stop them from doing the meanest stuff in the world.
Sure, and you know, Scott Walker's trying to undo some of the positive stuff that, you know, Democrats were able to get into that package. And, you know, I remind them, we're sitting at this hearing about welfare reform, and I remind Robin Voss was the author of the bill, you know, our
the popcorn man.
Yes. And he, our Speaker of the House, he was up there talking about the bill, and he brought up this whole, you know, Tommy Thompson welfare reform, this is the next welfare reform. And I said, you know, Tommy Thompson didn't do, he kept calling it Tommy Thompson's bipartisan welfare reform. I said, well, you know, first off, he was governor, but, you know, this was his project, and there was good and bad in it in the end. And, you know, certainly I give credit to those Democrats who fought and made sure that, you know, if they were going to come up with the bipartisan package, that it, that they could get as much as they could get in that was good for people. Things like ensuring that, you know, if women were going to have to, that women who were going to be in work experience programs had access to child care and other things they needed to actually be successful in doing so. And that's really the important part. You know, he didn't do that in a day. That was something that was negotiated and worked on, and feedback was sought, and all of these things happened over a long period of time. You know, Governor Walker, after Patty Shockner got elected up in Senate District 10, a red district, and a Democrat got elected in a special election.
Not a red district anymore.
Nope, but a few weeks ago, it flipped. And when that flipped, Governor Walker proposed this. And he is trying to push it through in a matter of just a couple of weeks. And I think it's a sure sign that this is an election gimmick, and quite frankly, it's a really expensive one. At least $90 million a year, millions more in startup costs, and we don't even have cost estimates on part of it, so we know that number's going to grow. And what do we get for it? Not a single dollar going to actually help people. It's to kick people when they're down, add layers of bureaucracy.
Let me play a clip of your colleague, the majority leader, Jim Steinke from Kakana, commenting about this and how wonderful it is.
I think this is punitive in any way. Could it be perceived as punitive?
No, I think actually what's punitive is keeping people reliant on government and not being independent. What we have to do a better job of is giving them the incentive to move off of benefit programs and into work. And I think as Representative Subix alluded to, most people want to do that naturally. What we have to do is give them the incentive to do that, find the way to connect them to the training that they need to get those jobs that are available. And that's what we're trying to accomplish in all this. Drug testing is more, it's not about being punitive, it's about finding the treatment that people need to get the jobs, because if they're on drugs and they can't pass drug tests, they can't get jobs.
You know, this has been tried before, and it's been an utter failure.
Absolutely, it has failed everywhere they've tried it. The reality is you want people to get off of these programs, they need to earn a living wage. Because most of the able-bodied people on these programs, now, the majority of the people on food share, for instance, are children, elderly, or disabled. But when you take out those groups, and you're looking at able-bodied adults, the majority of families have at least one working adult who are on food share. So if the majority of families that are able to work or already have at least one working adult, what does that say? They're not making enough money. We need full-time jobs that pay living wages. And instead, what's happening is people are being kept on these programs because we're subsidizing their employers. Their employers pay them a low wage, and in order for them to survive, we subsidize that wage with help with childcare, help with food, help with housing, and essentially we are enabling these corporations by agreeing to do this.
Amen.
And instead, we should be demanding that they pay living wages so that we don't have to pay for people's food, and we wouldn't have to pay for people's childcare, and these programs could help people who weren't able to work as opposed to people who are working but just can't make ends meet.
And of course, the paradox is that Republicans are, with one hand, are suppressing wages, and with the other, punishing workers. Stand by. We'll talk more with Lisa Subek at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SliceOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SliceOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
We're back with State Representative Lisa Subek. She is a Democrat from Madison's West Side. I want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on in the state legislature with one of your colleagues from Milwaukee, Josh Shepnick. What's going on in society? We've had the whole Me Too movement, and yet, you know, for a long time, women have been complaining about this, and a few men, to be fair, and yet it didn't really get anybody's attention. And all of a sudden, this fall, it just exploded. And yet, this is what's going on in the White House right now. I'm just going to play you a few clips from Rachel Maddow's show last night. I'm sure you've heard that the president's assistant, Rob Porter, is leaving finally after, you know, one of his wives showed a picture of a black eye and a battered face. All day yesterday, Donald Trump's White House chief of staff, John Kelly, was defending this guy as an honorable person when he knew all along, in fact, that this guy had a history of abuse. This is from Maddow last night, just kind of putting this in perspective.
In August 2016, there was a big political shakeup in the presidential campaign. Donald Trump's presidential campaign announced that Paul Manafort was out, and henceforth the new guy running the campaign would be the guy from the website Breitbart.com. He would be the new campaign CEO, Steve Bannon. He was announced to be the new head of the Trump campaign on August 17th. The following week, on August 25th, Politico was first to report that Steve Bannon had been criminally charged in a domestic violence case involving his former wife. The police report described in detail what allegedly happened on New Year's morning, 1996.
All right, that's the first one. Now let's go to the second.
The president nominated the CEO of Carl's Jr., Andy Puzder, to be Secretary of Labor. And it was then, once again, Politico that first broke the news that Puzder's ex-wife had also made serious allegations of domestic violence. She appeared on a 1990 episode of Oprah titled High Class Battered Women.
He vowed revenge. He said, I will see you in the gutter. This will never be over. You will pay for this.
And then here's number
president
three.
Himself has also, of course, faced domestic violence allegations. Journalist Harry Hurt obtained a copy of Ivana Trump's sworn divorce deposition. And in his book, Lost Tycoon, he detailed an episode of alleged violence and rape that is related in her sworn testimony. Ivana Trump has since recanted those allegations against Donald Trump. When the Daily Beast tried to report out that episode and figure out what really happened there, not long before Trump announced his presidential bid, Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, told the Daily Beast that there is no such thing legally as a man raping his wife. He told the publication, quote, "You cannot rape your spouse. There's very clear case law." That's not true at all.
What do you make of all that?
You know, it's hard to make much of it. It's pretty awful. And, you know, I think that right now in our country, we are, I hope, at a turning point where this kind of thing stops, where we stop accepting domestic violence as some sort of normal or okaying it in some situations or making excuses for it, and where we stop excusing sexual assault and sexual harassment and recognize just how pervasive these things are in our communities, in our culture, and in our power structures. And this is our moment to change, and I certainly hope that we are there. People are talking about these things in a way that they haven't before. It's, you know, on the news, in discussions by the, you know, water cooler, so to speak, in discussions in people's homes. And, you know, is that enough to stop the problem? No. I mean, we need to make it unacceptable. People need to not accept and not excuse these sorts of acts. And, you know, I certainly am hopeful that we're there. I think we are certainly one step closer, that's for sure. The Me Too movement has helped us get closer. I think that there's a lot of work to do. You know, we really need to make these actions 100% unacceptable. We cannot put people in power who have use their power to harm others. It all needs to stop right now. I think part of stopping that also means electing more women, getting more women into, you know, higher up positions in companies. I think if we saw more women executives, more women legislators, more women, you know, sort of walking the halls of all of the places that have classically been mostly men, that we would see a lot less of this behavior because the power balance would begin to shift. And we really do need to shift the power balance. That's really what this is about. As long as men have had power over women, they've been able to get away with these horrific acts. And I think women are reaching a point where they're no longer afraid to speak out. They're no longer afraid to say Me Too. And that's the first step in shifting that power balance.
But there are some women that have reached powerful positions that have turned a blind eye to this. Do you think this is generational?
It may be generational. You know, I mean, I think some of it is also a moment in time. I mean, I really think that unfortunately, we've had to have Donald Trump as our president perhaps to get us there. But I think that, you know, a moment in time where things have gotten so bad and so absurd, and we have somebody as president who, you know, during the campaign was revealed some of the horrific things that he had said and done.
He just called them all liars.
Yeah, well, yeah, and he called them all liars. And, you know, there were enough people out there who believed him to elect him, but I think that people, you know, are certainly seeing through that now. And, you know, it's hard to say what can happen going forward, but, you know, I think that it's time to stop ignoring it. I think that as women, we need to stand up and stand together and stand strong. And we also need our male allies to stand with us and say, we need to change the culture. We need to set forward on a path where it is not okay to sexually harass somebody, and certainly where it's not okay to say, I mean, it's really not okay now to do it, but we need to stop accepting it. You know, really set forth that action will be taken if you sexually harass somebody. That if you sexually assault someone or someone brings forth an accusation, they will be taken seriously. You know, for too long, women would bring forward these allegations and they wouldn't be taken seriously. And as a result, women were afraid to come forward or didn't want to come forward. You know, often women lost their jobs if they came forward. And, you know, it's time to change that culture. We need a culture shift, and we need women to stand up and say no more. And Yeah, as I said, we need to start seeing a better power balance in our culture in general between men and women to get to where we need to be.
Give me a sense, Lisa Subek with us at SlysOffice.com, where the Democrats are as far as recruiting candidates. Are you optimistic, other than what we saw in the 10th Senate district and the other assembly district where the Democrat performed very well, including winning the city of West Bend, which is almost unheard of? Are you convinced the Democrats have put together a slate of candidates, or is that still fluid?
You know, certainly things are still a little bit fluid, but I am very excited because we are recruiting some really great candidates. We have many of them out there getting their campaigns off the ground already. And we have more and more people coming forth with interest in running. I think, you know, if anything, this has charged people up, but it's charged up people who are ready to do the work, to hit the ground, to do what it takes to get elected. You know, certainly we are well positioned for a wave year where we can pick up some seats in the assembly, where we could win the governor's office, where perhaps we'll flip the Senate or at least pick up some seats in the Senate, really start moving back, sort of a reset for Wisconsin. Obviously, there's a big elephant in the room, which is nobody knows what will happen with the redistricting case that's in the Supreme Court. It seems to me to be unlikely that whatever happens would affect the 2018 election.
Although if they rule it, unconstitutional, how do you
right? How do you elect? How do you exactly? I mean, I think it's a big question mark. You know, I think there is a practical matter of the time it would take to get new maps in place may push it out, and I don't know if we'd see special elections. I don't know what that could mean. So, you know, the big elephant in the room is, of course, the redistricting case. And as Democrats, we are recruiting candidates such that we are ready for 2018 with a good slate of candidates throughout the state, but we are also recruiting candidates with the thought in mind that some districts that are horribly gerrymandered now could go through some change and provide some additional opportunities for us.
And it's quite clear the governor is scared out of his mind because he's not calling special elections for the seat held by Keith Ripp and the seat that was held by Senator Lassay, Frank Lassay, up in the Fox Valley, not calling special elections for those.
No, and I think that the fact, you know, there's a couple things that tell us the governor's scared out of his mind. One is he's not calling special elections on vacant seats. He doesn't want another election like Patty Shockner's where, you know, Democrats win in a seat that had historically for some time been a Republican seat.
Well, and the Republicans had a pretty strong candidate. Adam Jarko's no fool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had a sitting assembly person who is a serious contender. This wasn't somebody who, you know, sort of walked in and said, I'm running.
It wasn't Roy Moore.
What they needed to do.
It wasn't
Adam Roy. Adam has won elections before. He knows how to win elections. He does the work. So clearly, you know, this was a change in the voters. This wasn't about, you know, them having a bad candidate. This was, you know, we had a great candidate.
She was of her. There was a lesson there. She was of her district.
Yes, she was of her district, and she, you know, showed us that we can do this. And I think it's, you know, presents some exciting opportunities. I also think, you know, the governor's scared that he didn't call special elections. But I also think we see fear in the governor if you watch his State of the State address and you look at what he's been doing since. We have never seen him flip-flop on policy like this, but he is flip-flopping all over the map. What's coming out of his mouth is not what's, you know, the actions he's taken.
He doesn't even have the votes for some of that stuff.
No, and he doesn't have the votes for most of what he proposes. You know, to me, it's kind of outrageous, you know, what we've seen in the governor. He's flip-flopping around, and, you know, it really is. You know, we're seeing in his candidacy just how, you know, sort of underhanded he can be, you know, not being real honest with the voters and grasping at straws, you know, kind of, I think he's willing to do whatever it'll take to get reelected. And what it's going to take is him, you know, sounding like a different governor than he was.
Well, he's never really grown into being a governor and a leader. He's always been a politician.
Yeah, he's always been a politician, absolutely. And, you know, I think the voters are ready not to be fooled by him. You know, I think people are fed up with what's going on in the state of Wisconsin. They're fed up with the environment and the atmosphere that Scott Walker's created. They know that what they're bringing home in their paychecks hasn't gone up. You know, I think that's probably what we were talking about earlier is probably one of the best examples. People are living paycheck to paycheck. Their cost of living is going up. but the dollars they're bringing home hasn't. And they are not better off under Governor Walker than they were 8 years ago when he came in.
Lisa Subak, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.